Hello and welcome to another edition of the End Zone Podcast. My name is Eric Jensen and I'm joined today by my good friend Jay. How you doing, Jay?
Doing good. Good to be back.
Yeah, absolutely. Feels like it's been a little while. I want to just apologize up front. I always get like, when I get into the actual regular season, I get in such a rhythm with guests. Like, yeah. I have like the same guys on over and over and over again. So hopefully we can get you a Met rotation this year. I know it's always busy with school and stuff. I kind of don't I kind of don't record on the most school schedule, school-friendly schedule. But we are in, you know, times of apocalypse now.
And yeah, all online school now.
It seems like free time is at an abundant rate. So I'm going to get as many different kind of old guests from the podcast as long as possible. How are you doing through all of this? I know it's crazy right now.
Yeah, it is definitely crazy right now. You know, sports to kind of save me from all the boredom. But I mean, other than that, can't complain. I did end up getting my internship ended early because of Corona, but I do have another one starting up here in the summer. So I'm treating it as a little 1 month vacation, especially with school going online. But no, definitely, I'm doing pretty good since the last time I called you. Pretty good.
All right, that's awesome, man. So let's get into it. There was some NFL news today, and there seems to be every day these days with free agency going on. The day started with Darius Slay being traded to the Philadelphia Eagles for a third and a fifth round pick, I want to say.
Yep.
I think I got that right. Jay, I'm a big fan of Darius Slay as a Broncos fan and kind of person who covers the Broncos a little bit. I was obviously looking into him heavily this offseason when the trade rumors about him started, as he would have, I think, been like an ideal replacement for Chris Harris Jr. Of course, they ended up going with AJ Boye. But Darius Slay, I think he's pretty good. What are your thoughts on this move? Do you like it for Philadelphia? And do you think Detroit got enough back?
Yeah, I think I like it both ways. One, he signed that extension, 3 years, $48 million. A little higher paid on the cornerback relation scale. He's worth it. I mean, he's a top 10 corner. He's very good, well-respected around the league. Third and fifth round pick, I mean, for his age, he's 29. That's about the going rate. I mean, we saw Calais Campbell go to the Ravens for, I believe, a fifth round pick. We just saw Jarrell Casey from the Titans get traded to the Broncos today for a seventh round pick. And I think that's just the going rate for veterans. And I think a third and a fifth was just kind of it was appropriate. I mean, he's a top-level corner, but at the same time, I mean, he is 29. He did.
Yeah, I think it's uber interesting how the NFL has shifted the past few years. It feels like trades during this kind of free agency period are just so much more prevalent now than they used to be. And it seems like teams are less like – some teams, like the Broncos, like the Eagles – are less willing to go out and spend big money on free agents, but are willing to trade these kind of day three picks for veteran guys that are more proven than some of the best free agents on the market. I would argue if Darius Slay hit the market, he would be the best cornerback available. And it seems like they kind of got him for less than they bargained for. I think Detroit kind of got robbed here. I think they should have asked for a second at least.
From general terms, I completely agree with you. But I mean, when you look around trades around the NFL, we consistently see teams overvaluing draft picks. I think if it was up to me, if I was the one controlling the market, if I was God of the NFL economy, I mean, he should have gone for a first, because I mean, think about it. There's like a 50-60% hit rate on first-round picks, and a hit is defined as someone who's like a starter or whatever. And Darius Slay is much better than a normal starter. I mean, he's a Pro Bowl, All-Pro caliber talent. I mean, if I was in charge of the NFL economy, I think a guy like that should go for a first-round pick. But I just think the way the NFL values picks, they overvalue draft picks, and I'm assuming a lot of it has to do with the contract slot the money is already kind of guaranteed of what you're going to be paying them. They don't have to worry about, okay, this guy's going to be making $18 million or $14 million. You know, okay, this guy's going to be making $2 million in 3 years, 4 years, 5 years, whatever. That's I think that's what they like. They like consistency of that money. And that's why they're kind of overvaluing those draft picks.
So I want to press you on that because I would disagree with some of the moves we've seen this offseason. I would say NFL teams are currently undervaluing draft picks. I would argue that a third and a fifth round pick are not the most valuable of picks. And you brought up the Jurrell Casey trade to the Broncos earlier this week. Jurrell Casey went for a seventh rounder. That is way undervalued.
Well, when I say that, I'm saying they're – how do I explain this? So Jurrell Casey, I think he should go for – let's say I should think he should go for a third round pick, all right? He goes for a seventh round pick. To me, that means that the draft picks are overvalued because they think a seventh round pick is better than it is. Like, to me, a seventh round pick is worthless, right?
Right.
And if they're getting Jurrell Casey for a seventh their pick, then that's, to me, that's them overvaluing that draft.
Okay, I kind of see where you're coming from now. Yeah. Apologies that I didn't get that on the first
round. No, definitely my fault.
I think that's incredibly stupid that the NFL does that, because and I think both you and I agree, like, those fifth, like, I would say anywhere from, like, the fourth round down, like, only, like, 20 to 10% of those guys actually hit and make an impact on a roster.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sharing the numbers, but I mean, that sounds about right. Like, I'm going with that for the premise. I mean, definitely. I think teams are definitely overvaluing picks 100%.
Yeah. So that is the Darius Slay trade. What do you think this does for Philadelphia's defense?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not too familiar on Philadelphia specifically, but I do know they've had some defensive struggles in the past since that Super Bowl year. I know they've been kind of starving for a corner very bad. And just because of knowing those two things, I think it's a great move for them. They didn't give up too much for him. And, I mean, obviously, a third and a fifth round pick, I mean, you're getting a very good player in return for those things. So I don't think they're losing too much in terms of value. Yes, they're paying him $16 million a year for the next 3 years. But, again, he's a top 10 corner. So I don't think they're too worried about that money.
Yeah. They have had a kind of an under-the-radar, sneaky big offseason. They signed Javon Hargraves, one of the best nose tackles in the entire NFL, I'd argue. I know that they lost Malcolm Jenkins, obviously, to the Saints, but they kept Rodney McLeod around. They signed Jalen Mills as well. And then you trade for Darius Slay. They've kind of redone their entire secondary. I would say that the Eagles have flown really under the radar this free agency, and they've done really, really well.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, they've, like I said, I think the Slay trade is kind of the cream on the cake, for lack of a better term. And I think, perfectly. I mean, they've been on the move. They've been making moves for sure. I think there should be a team to watch in the next year, though, especially with Carson Wentz finally being healthy. Hopefully he's able to kind of take the reins and fill that promise that we think he's able to do. I think they should be in good shape.
It is really interesting, though. They spent a lot of their picks on defense, but they still have very limited offense, especially with a incredibly weak wide receiver core that might include –
Yeah, I've even hearing rumors that they're trying to trade Alshon Jeffery.
Yeah, that's been out there for a while now, and if he does get traded, they basically have no one at wide receiver. So I was kind of surprised they didn't try harder to go after a wide receiver. Let me check their SpotTrack numbers really quick. I don't know if they have enough money to go after a guy like this, but there are some pretty talented free agents still on the market. Robbie Anderson.
Brandon Cooks was just made available today as well.
Robbie Anderson's on the market. Brandon Cooks is on the market. Emmanuel Sanders is still on the market. And these are guys that you're going to probably be able to get for a discount because of how deep it is into free agency now. And the Eagles still have $35 million in cap to spend. Like, I can only imagine the max for one of those. If we average all three of the contracts those guys are going to get, I would say the average is probably like 12 to 13 million.
Yeah, like,
there's no way they're making more money than that. So I think that the Eagles have a tremendous opportunity, and they should go out after guys like Robbie Anderson and Emmanuel Sanders and kind of remake that core. They also have a nice pick in a pretty wide receiver heavy draft. So it'll be interesting to see what the Eagles do for the rest of this kind of offseason as well. But I think they've had a very promising start. And again, I mean, everyone said it last year going into the season. They do look like one of the best rosters in the NFL. Yet again, it'll just be a matter of keeping people healthy and getting.
I'm going to disagree with one of the better rosters in the NFL, but I think they have a good team. I think they're going to be an 8-18 this year. But it all depends on Carson Wentz. I mean, if he can stay healthy,
I don't know, man. If they got an actual wide receiving core, I think that's one of the best rosters in the NFL.
I don't think they have that, though. And I think they still need some – I think they still need
– That's a good point. You caught me dreamcasting a little bit.
Yeah.
I think the Eagles have a ton to be hopeful about. They've had a really good free agency period.
Yeah, for sure.
My overall point here. The Rams cut Todd Gurley, and the Rams have just – had an exodus of players recently, it seems. They cut Clay Matthews as well today, Brandon Cooks as well.
Yeah.
It is kind of crazy.
Did they cut Brandon Cooks? I thought he was just traded. I thought they put him on the trade block.
Oh, I was unaware either way. I thought you meant they cut him. No.
So I heard they put him on the trade block. They as far as I know, they didn't cut him.
Okay. All right. I apologize about that.
No, you're good.
I did see this tweet by My Sports Update at this point. Obviously, they have lost a lot. They lost Dante Fowler. They lost Michael Brockers, Corey Littleton, Clay Matthews. Their entire defense is basically gone along with – and that has a lot to do with the fact that the Wade Phillips era is over in Los Angeles. I don't know how they're going to – compete next year. What was that?
They're a last place team to me. I mean, everyone else in the division has gotten so much better. To me, they're the fourth place team in that division. They pretty much only have Donald and Ramsey on defense, and the two first round picks they traded for Jalen Ramsey. I mean, that has killed their future. They only have like four. I think they only have four picks in 2021. I read that somewhere. Next year, this upcoming year, they don't have a first round pick. I mean, it's not looking good for them.
Yeah, absolutely. It is kind of crazy how quickly that window for the Rams closed. Like, 2 years ago, to think that this was the team that was, quote, changing football forever. And suddenly, you're absolutely right. They look like a team that's going to be the worst in the division in a really tough Now, that said, I think throughout free agency, what I've learned is the NFC West is the best division in football right now.
I completely agree.
Hands down.
And this kind of segues right into our next segment. I mean, that DeAndre Hopkins trade to the Cardinals.
Yes. We talked about this on on our show Monday, but I wanted to revisit it in a segment that I want to do, off-season coaches on the hot seat. And let's start with Bill O'Brien. Jay, we've had a little bit of distance now. What is your kind of reaction to this whole DeAndre Hopkins situation with all these comments that have come out about his relationship with Bill O'Brien? What's kind of your main takeaway here?
My main takeaway would be that he's off his rocker. I mean, there's no way you can trade. I mean, by many people's opinion, top receiver in the NFL, number one receiver in the NFL. They essentially got a second round pick and an overpaid washed running back in return. To me, I mean, and I think anyone I've talked to, it's completely terrible trade. I mean, the Cardinals absolutely stole DeAndre Hopkins. I mean, by all accounts, he should have gone for two first-round picks, 100%. Because I believe he still has, like, 3 years left on his deal. He's making, like, I want to say like 13 or 14 million. Not, I mean, not chump change, but I mean, right now we're seeing Brandon Cooks is making 20 million a year. I believe Michael Thomas is making the same. I mean, to me, it's just asinine that he would want to trade DeAndre Hopkins for supposedly not being happy about mamas or having too many baby mamas around or whatever it was. But to me, being a talent like that, you need to have him around. I mean, there's no excuse to trade a guy like that.
And the fact that you went out and, like, the move was almost, like, so incredibly tone-deaf. Like, literally a few hours later, they're like, oh, yeah, you know who we're going to replace DeAndre Hopkins with? Randall Cobb. Randall Cobb seems like a good DeAndre Hopkins replacement.
Like, and they gave him, like, what, $9 million a year or something crazy like that?
Yeah, that's not – I want to be clear. That's not a dig on Randall Cobb. I think he can still play. He was good with the Cowboys last year, I would argue.
He was good, but I mean, $9 million.
He's certainly not a number one wide receiver.
Exactly.
It'll be interesting to see how that whole Texas scenario plays out. But I did want to kind of jump back to the Rams really quick. Todd Gurley, where do you think landing spots are? Just recently, apparently, Dez Bryant tweeted Todd Gurley to the Chiefs, ? And then he said, OMD. I don't think that's a report because I don't think Dez Bryant's an NFL insider. But what are some interesting landing spots for Todd Gurley potentially?
I think the top two spots as of now would be Tampa Bay, Kansas City. I would even look to Los Angeles, the Chargers. I could see him staying in Los Angeles. But I don't think that's the most likely scenario. I would say Tampa Bay and the Chiefs are the two most likely scenarios. But like I said, I mean the Chargers did just sign Austin Eckler to that I think the 3-deal maybe. I don't remember. Signed him an extension. I believe he's making like 6 or 7 million.
I believe it's a 4-year deal.
Team friendly. 4-year deal. Okay, and very team friendly deal, but. I mean, if they can get Todd Gurley for cheap, I could definitely see them doing that because even when Melvin Gordon was back last year, I mean, Austin Eckler still had a very, very good role. And to me, I think they could use a 1-2 attack, especially with Tyrod Taylor being their starting quarterback as of now. And I mean, maybe it ends up being a rookie, but it does not hurt to have a good running game for a rookie quarterback or even a quarterback that isn't at that top tier like Tyrod Taylor is.
But is Todd Gurley still that guy? That's my only question, because
I think he is in limited snaps.
I don't know. The only success he had was at the end of last year. He had about 3 good games at the end of last year, but other than that, he was pretty much kept off the stat sheet even when he had limited snaps with the Rams last year. I just don't know how much I would trust Todd Gurley as a running back option, and I think that is really interesting. I think NFL GMs have learned the running back market, I don't think, will ever be the same. I think Le'Veon
Bell, I hope so.
I think the days of Le'Veon Bell type holdouts are gone because, and this is an interesting topic to talk about just kind of off the blue, there are so many free agent running backs still on the market. I believe Matt Breida hasn't signed yet. Melvin Gordon's is still a free agent.
And I hope Joe Mixon is listening to this too.
They're just like NFL scouts think they can find these guys growing on trees in the draft, I guess, because they are definitely not getting. I feel like the life expectancy for a running back in the NFL at this point, unless you're Frank Gore, is like what, 4 or 5 seasons at max?
4, 5, 6 seasons. Yeah. I mean, I forget who posted it today, but I saw on Twitter there was the first time was there were no running backs that were drafted in the 2020 class that are with their original team. 1, 2, I think the next thing was the top 6 or 7 highest paid running back. No, like the top 10 running backs, like 1 or 2, no, like 3 of them had a good season, and then the other 7 were either bad, injured, or something else. I don't remember what it was. But, I mean, the point of the matter being, don't pay running backs. And I hope, like I said earlier, I don't know if you caught it, I hope Joe Mixon is listening to this because I want to keep Joe Mixon on the Bengals. I do. But I'm not going to give him 12, 13, 14 million a year. And I'm certainly not going to tolerate a holdout. And I'm just going to tote out Rodney Anderson, or I'm going to tote out Trayvon Williams and say, sorry, Joe. I mean, I love you. I love what you've done for Cincinnati, but I can't pay a running back 12, 13, 14 million. I just can't. Would I give him 9 or 10? Fine. But, like, I'm not going to give a guy 12, 13, 14. It's just not plausible.
And especially the way they've used Joe Mixon the past 2 years. It kind of flies under the radar, but because they're the Bengals, but his touch numbers are, like, insane. Am I not wrong on that? Like, they give him the ball, like, an inordinate amount of time, and he's still really good, but he was basically their offense last year.
He was hurt for a period of time last year. But with that token, I don't think his touch numbers weren't astronomically large. I mean, they were right in line with, I mean, the top 12 in the NFL. I think Zeke was getting more touches than him. I think there's a couple other running backs. I think Derrick Henry was getting more touches than him. But, I mean, yeah, he was definitely top 10 in terms of touches. But, I mean, his first two years, that was not the case. I mean, his rookie year, he did not see very many touches at all. I mean, relatively same thing with his second year. He saw increased load, don't get me wrong. But he was, I think he only had, he was like 15th in the NFL in carries, I believe, his sophomore season. This third year, I mean, last year he did increase that number a lot. But I think, I'm not as worried as much, but I'm more worried about just the overall shelf life of running backs. I think the correlation has more to do with age and seasons in the NFL than it does snap counts. Just because I'm not really seeing any running backs that are going past 5, 6, 7 years, regardless of 100 touches. They're all ending up kind of in the same place of being. There's my dog. Kind of just ending up that 4 or 5. Ending at that 4, 5, 6 year mark.
Yeah, absolutely. The last piece of news before we get to our segment here today, and that's really all this is. I don't really have a hot take on this or anything, but this is kind of an NFL news show. Sean Payton has tested positive for coronavirus, so obviously. Shout out to him. I feel like that's I don't know how to properly broach this, but hope you get better, Sean Payton. That sucks, dude. Stay away from people and recover, and hopefully you do recover and you're in our thoughts, and hopefully you get back out there soon. But our thoughts are with Coach Sean Payton as he's been diagnosed with coronavirus. Let's get to the fun part now. AFC North. So I had you on, Jay, because you're a Bengals fan, and I think for the first time in my entire lifetime, the Bengals made moves in free agency. How shocked are you that they, just as a Bengals fan, kind of put in perspective to maybe someone who's newer to the NFL, how big of kind of a shock this is?
Well, the Bengals are – how do I put this in? Okay, so everyone has that really cheap uncle, right? The guy that kind of just buys – and there's nothing wrong with this, not hating, but kind of just always buys, like, the bare minimum. Maybe doesn't go for, like, the traditional, like, name brands like Cheerios or Crest or Apple. Bengals are that uncle, all right? They're never going to be active on the first 3 days of free agency. As at least in the past, they're always going to go for the bargain signings. I mean, up to this point, you'll see them taking like maybe 4 or 5, sometimes $6-7 million a year guys, often those poor guys. For example, I mean, D.W. Webb, John Miller, those two guys have just been released by the team. But last year they signed with the team on some very, player-friendly deals that were kind of averaging them making a lot more than they really should have. And personally, I would not have paid them that money at the time, and it's looking like the Bengals are realizing that now. But like I said, it's a huge deal now because They just made two very big signings, and that's completely out of character. And personally, in my lifetime, I think me and Eric are around the same age. I have never seen them make a signing like this. The last time, yeah, I can't even remember. I mean, I to put it in perspective, I'm about 20 years old, and I've never seen this happen. And we got some signs earlier on in the year, earlier probably January, December, that this was going to be the year that they're going to change. And I heard some of those rumors, and then ran by Paul Denner Jr., who's a kind of Bengals beat writer. And who has his finger on the pulse of the Bengals pretty well. And so we all came into this thinking like, this was going to be the year. This is going to be the year. And then on day one of free agency, nothing happened. And myself included, I was all over Twitter saying that Duke Tobin lied to us. Cause even Duke Tobin came out and said, it's not a question of whether we're going to spend money. We're going to spend money. And we all just thought we were getting lied to again. And that, Bengals aren't going to send money because Joe Schobert got signed, Joe Thuney got tagged, Graham Glasgow got signed, Nick Kwiatkowski got signed, all these guys that the Bengals were supposedly in on, and they didn't get the deal done. And we all kind of were just under the assumption that the Bengals were just going to be the same old Bengals. They weren't going to spend money. They might sign a $5-7 million per year guy, but that was going to be it. And Boy, were we wrong. They ended up signing Trey Waynes for $42 million over 3 years, $30 million guaranteed, DJ Reader for like $53 million over 4 years. I mean, it ended up being a very good free agency period so far.
So what do you think has inspired the change within the Bengals organization? Do you think it's Zach Taylor, or is there someone else as a Bengals fan that you kind of think is influencing – you know, Mike Brown's ear? And obviously he has not been a guy that has been known to be flexible or change his mind ever. Like, what has gotten into the Bengals, I guess, is my question.
That's a complicated question, and I'm going to give you a complicated answer.
Okay.
So when everyone was pushing for Marvin Lewis's job, everyone thought that Marvin Lewis was part of the problem. We knew the Bengals had their issues. We knew front office had their issues, but we were pushing for Marvin Lewis to be out of there. He was just too average, too mediocre for us. And when he left, Zach Taylor obviously came in. He kind of came in late in the process last year. And the Bengals had their traditional free agency period after kind of having signs that things might change. And things seemingly got worse last year. So then we came onto this thought process that, was Marvin Lewis actually – pressuring the Bengals to do more than they would have normally, and this is what we have without Marvin Lewis. Crap, did we make the wrong decision? Like, did we get rid of a good coach that was kind of putting pressure on the front office? And I wasn't on that train, but a lot of people had that thought process. And but I mean, to simplify the answer, I think it was the fans. I mean, we saw record low ticket sales last year, record low attendance, record low viewership, and I think Mike Brown finally got the message that, hey, something has to change. And I think that's why we're going to see Andy Dalton leave this year. I think that's why we're going to see a lot of the cuts we're seeing with B.W. Webb, John Miller. Those guys were underperforming. Drake Patrick's about to get cut, although there's some rumors that he might return on a restructured deal. But, I mean, that's why we're seeing all these changes happen, because, I mean, Mike Brown, I mean, the only way you're going to affect a guy like Mike Brown is when you're touching his wallet. When you're taking money out of his wallet, that's when he's going to try and fix things. And he has to spend the money either way because of the CBA, because every team has to spend 90% of their cap. So I think he finally figured out that, hey, if I want to keep these fans happy, I got to spend some money. I got to give them something to be excited about.
So with Andy Dalton, I guess my question is, how confident are you that he won't be on this roster in week one? Because to me, I look around the NFL, and I think for the first time ever, you can realistically say there are more starting-level quarterbacks than there are starting positions available in the NFL. I don't think that's been the case.
I'm going to make an adjustment to what you said. There's more quarterbacks perceived to be starters than there are spots in the NFL. I think there's less than 32 starting quarterbacks, but I think in the eyes of the NFL, I think we have, like you said, there are 32 spots that seemingly look full.
So, yeah, I guess that's my question. Where do you really foresee him leaving this roster at some point? And if they aren't able to trade him, do you think they'd ever cut him? Or is there a chance that he sits behind Joe Burrow for a year?
I would say as of now, I'm 100% sure he's not going to be on this team next year. And the reason I say that is because of the cap situation. They literally cannot afford to have him on the roster. So to me, it's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when. Now, personally, I would keep him on the roster through training camp. And because right now, I mean, I'm going to go into my little spiel on Andy Dalton right now. Right now, it's looking like it's going to be the Patriots or maybe the Chargers. But we have Cam Newton on the market right now. We have Joe Flacco on the market right now. And right now, there's only two teams that are realistically needing a quarterback. And, I mean, the Bears just traded for Foles. Right now, you have the Patriots, and you kind of have the Chargers. And, I mean, that's pretty much it right now. So if they can't get a third-round pick for Andy Dalton right now, personally, I would hold on to him until training camp. Maybe a quarterback gets injured and a team gets desperate, and you get a second or third-round pick for him. And if that doesn't happen, you just cut him. Because, I mean, a fourth-round pick, I'm willing to wager a fourth-round pick at that point. But right now they can't afford to have him on the books come week one. So as of now, I think 100% he's gone by week one. He's not going to stay on this team for the 2020 regular season. And he's kind of made that clear himself. He said last year, if they weren't going to start him, I want to get traded when they pushed him right before the deadline. And I think he doesn't want to be here unless he's starting. And I mean, he's a great guy. So I'm not going to say he's going to tell Burr that he's not going to help him, because he's a great guy. I mean, Andy Dalton's genuinely a really good guy. He's not going to hurt the team that he's on, but at the same time, he is going to want out.
All right. So the Bengals obviously made a lot of moves, but in general, the AFC North had a ton of movers and shakers this offseason. They have one of the highest turnover rates in the NFL, I'd argue. And let's just start with, I think, the team that I would consider thus far as offseason champion, the Baltimore Ravens. Holy cow, dude. They had Michael Brockers, one of the best defensive tackles in the game. They had Calais Campbell, a guy who's been a Pro Bowler the last few years. I know he didn't make it last year, but he's still a top caliber kind of defensive end who's probably got a year or two left. They keep Matthew Judon with the franchise tag. What?
As of now, I think they could end up trading him, but as of now, he's on the roster, yeah.
It's just, to me, it looks to me like they have loaded up on defense, and I get that there are still questions kind of at wide receiver. You might want to add one more, but now you don't have to fill all these defensive holes in the draft, and you can potentially trade up for one of these great wide receivers, and then suddenly...
An extra second-round pick. They traded Hayden Hurst, who, I mean, to me, wasn't even a third-round, second-round, first-round draft pick when he was drafted. He's traded him. They drafted him in the first round.
Right.
And they got a second pick for him. To me, that's crazy because he was nowhere near worth that.
Yeah, it was a great trade for the Ravens. They have a ton of draft capital all of a sudden, and you could look at this team a year from now and say they have the best roster in the AFC. I still think the best team in the AFC is the Chiefs, but it's hard to not look at this roster right now and say they have the best roster in the AFC.
Yeah, I mean, they don't have any holes at all. They have, I mean, Earl Thomas at safety. They're set at corner with, his name is escaping me. Alabama guy. Crap. Forget his name. Oh,
Jimmy Ward.
Not Jimmy Ward.
He just signed with the Niners. I got to get that through my head.
Marlon Humphrey.
I've made that mistake twice.
They sat there with Marlon Humphrey. Like you said, they have that great defensive line that they with Clias Campbell, Matt Judon. But I think, I mean, the most underrated part of that team is their offensive line. And I would argue that's their best positional unit. And as you know, a lot of the Super Bowl teams, every Super Bowl team
the offensive line
success, and you there?
Yeah. Sorry, man. You just kind of cut out for a second. No. But with the offensive line, They have had some turnover there. Marshall Yanda just retired, correct?
Correct, he did.
So
they still have the bookend tackles, though. They have Ronnie Stanley, who I would argue is a top five, top eight tackle in the league. Like early on in his career, especially when he's getting drafted, but he's proven people wrong. He's shown that he's a top 10, top 15 right tackle. They're still decent throughout the interior as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Moving on to the Cleveland Browns, they also made a ton of moves. I have a Browns fan that was on this show with you earlier, Pierce, and he has been super doom and gloom about their free agency, but I kind of think they've had a great free agency. They've added Jack Conklin, who's a Pro Bowl offensive tackle, and that's a need for them. If they draft another guy in the top 10, which they probably will, all of a sudden your offensive line woes are kaput. You have a great offensive line. You sign Andrew Billings to a defensive tackle. He gives you some more depth, obviously, coming over from the Bengals, and you know a lot about Billings. He's maybe not the best defensive tackle in the league or by any stretch, but he's still a solid player that can be a stopgap kind of guy. They add Austin Hooper. I know a lot of people kind of hated that, and I get that it's a lot of money, but I do think Austin Hooper's a pretty good tight end. I might not agree with the contract amount, but I think he's still a good tight end, and it's a good signing for them. And they add some depth at quarterback with Case Keenum. I think they've had a pretty good offseason all in all.
I'd call it average. I mean, I'm not a big fan of the Austin Hooper signing. I think he's not even at the level that David Njoku is, and he's still on that roster. I mean, if they can end up getting a third or second round pick, what the Ravens did with Hayden Hurst for him, I think that'd make it a lot better. But I think Njoku at this point is a better tight end than Hooper. He can be relied on more. He's more consistent, and I think he has higher highs. In terms of Andrew Billings, I like that signing a lot more than most. I was hoping Billings would stay on the team. Obviously, with us signing DJ Reader, that's not really possible, especially with the other nose tackle we have on our roster. But, I mean, Billings is an above-average run defender. He has promise as a pass rusher. And, I mean, for a one technique or a zero tech, that nose tackle role, I think he's – I mean, there's not many in the league that are better than him. I would consider him top 10 nose tackle in the NFL.
Right. And then finishing up here within the division, the Pittsburgh Steelers, they obviously have the quietest offseason, obviously the most coming back from free agency, but they are kind of in cap hell at this point. I think that's interesting to point out. They are one of the few teams in the NFL that is really in trouble cap-wise.
Yeah, I think that's interesting because, I mean, you really don't hear them making these big signings or anything like that. They did sign Derek Watt this year, but I don't – when I think of them, I mean, I think of Cameron Hayward and I think of only two guys that really come to mind in terms of big cap guys. I mean, other than Big Ben, obviously. I mean, Juju's still on a rookie contract. They don't have Bell or Antonio Brown on the books anymore. Ryan Shazier obviously hadn't had a career because of his injuries. And to me, they don't have that many guys that deserve that much money. So it's kind of hard to picture why they're in cap hell. TJ Watt still on his rookie contract. So I do think it's interesting that they are in cap hell, but I mean, you're absolutely right. They have been very quiet. They franchise tagged Bud Dupree. So I think that's interesting. I think it's going to remain pretty quiet for them unless they make some trades, but I really don't see that happening either. I think they're pretty content with their roster, especially with Big Ben coming back and hopefully having another healthy year after an injured year last year.
And that's huge. I brought this up with Nick, obviously, you know Nick. Nick Farbaugh, the last time he was on. It's huge. This season for the Steelers is absolutely massive. I feel like this is it. This is the window. The window is this year. Because then you're going to have to pay Juju and you're going to have to pay TJ Watt and Minkah Fitzpatrick and all these guys on defense are going to want massive contracts because they're one of the best, if not the best defense in the NFL. And then you have offensive kind of question marks because James Conner is going to become a free agent soon. this is the year for the Steelers. If they do not go big and win a championship this year, I would consider that a failure for them.
I wouldn't consider it a failure, but I mean, I think they definitely need to make the playoffs for what they've done to pay off. I mean, a lot of teams have the same mindset, but when I think about, the Bud Dupree franchise tag, for example, I think that's a short-term move with Big Ben coming back in his age. I believe he's 37, age 37 season. I mean, that's a short-term move. And with them kind of committing to Mason Rudolph for the near future as their backup quarterback, as their quarterback of the future, and Buck Hodges as that in that kind of same role, I mean, they're kind of committing to Big Ben being there, giving one or two good years, and then kind of turning over the hatch to them and probably seeing some rebuilding.
Yeah, and I don't think you can obviously return a – I don't think you can turn the franchise over to either one of those guys.
Exactly.
I think that they've definitely got some work to do in that position, especially Mason Rudolph. I'm kind of amazed he's – I think he – this is a hot take, but I think he might be a camp cut, honestly. I just don't see him – on that roster or on an NFL roster in general. He was awful last year. Like, the worst quarterback in the entire NFL, even among the backups that started. But I just do – I do think still that this is a massive year for the Steelers. Well, Jay, thank you very much. A great injustice has been done to the world. Your previous Twitter handle was disbanded because you got too big, the establishment got afraid, and they shut down, my man. So where can people follow you now? Let's rebuild the following from my man Jay, Bengals handle on Twitter. Always a great guy to talk Bengals with. Always a great source of NFL information, one of the best out there. Tell us where we can find your stuff, man.
Yeah, so formerly was at Bengals handle, just like the door handle. Had 1,500 followers. Now we're down to a cool 150. So about 10% of my former following. You can find me on Twitter at BP, so letter B, letter P, and then my old handle, Bengals handle. I have a podcast called the Who Day Talk Podcast, and listen in there. I don't know if we're done here, but probably hear some similar things on my podcast as we're going to hear at the rest of this podcast. So are you wanting me on for a couple, 30 more minutes? So I can discuss some Bengals stuff?
No. I do not want to hear that much about the Bengals. But I'll save it for your podcast. Go check out the Who Day podcast. Yeah. If you want more Bengals news, I've gotten all the Bengals news I can personally stomach.
I didn't even give you that much. That's the sad part. You had me all pumped up. I have 2 pages full of Bengals free agent signings. Note, stuff like that. You got me overprepared.
Well, DJ Reader, you didn't really delve in. I didn't really push you much. What do you think of the signings, I guess? DJ Reader, as a Broncos guy, I obviously really wanted DJ Reader. But yeah, the Bengals beat him out. He's obviously a really talented guy. I'll be honest. Trey Waynes, don't buy the hype. Like,
no, I don't either.
He's like, you might have overpaid there because he's
– that was my least favorite signing.
He's like – he's arguably a bust. Like, he's not that good.
I wouldn't call him a bust. I mean, the thing with him and Drake Kirkpatrick, right, he's going to come in, he's going to replace Drake Kirkpatrick. When I compare the two guys, all right, I see – okay, well, first we're going to start off with the contract, 42 over 3. He's getting 14 a year. That's a lot, all right? Making $10 million in cap this year. Next year, you can cut him for $10 million in dead. The next year after that, his third year, you can cut him for $5 million. Backloaded deal. It's an overpay, but it needed to happen because the Bengals, they need to make a splash free agent signing. They needed to spend that money. Compared to Dreda, better tackler, more disciplined, less penalties, better run defender. Won't struggle as much in crunch time, won't choke like Dre does. Better straight line speed, slightly less agile. But they're very similar in terms of play style, strengths and weaknesses, build, kind of all similar. Gray's a better zone cut corner. Wayne's better man-to-man. And in the last hour or two, there have been reports that Drake or Patrick could return on a restructure. And if that happens, I would watch, and this is kind of some NFL news, I would watch for William Jackson III trade. Because I don't see them keeping Drake or Patrick and making him a backup corner. And with them just signing Mackenzie Alexander, with them just signing Trey Waynes, with them liking Darius Phillips, if they bring back Drake or Patrick, I mean, that could spell out a William Jackson III trade.
All right. I will definitely keep an eye on that. Thank you very much, Jay. We will be back. I'm going to take what I have been doing, a podcast today, as promised. Tomorrow, I will continue a podcast today, but not on this podcast. I will be on a different podcast, on the Pinch Hit podcast, doing an album review because there's no baseball. So I am listening to a Princess Nokia album. I don't know if you're familiar with her. And
I'm not.
We will review her and see how she stacks up as an artist. I've never done an album review before. This guy does them all the time, so I'm kind of excited. So check that out tomorrow on there. And then Saturday I'm going to have Pierce on, and that'll go a million different directions.
All right, perfect. Let me know when you want me back on.
All right, absolutely, Jay. Thank you very much. Stay safe out there, everybody.
Yeah, you too. Don't get corona. See you.
Everybody stay safe. And we will see y'all next time. Follow us on Twitter at EnzoPod. Peace out.
Peace.
Follow us on Twitter at EnzoPod. If you have any suggestions, questions, or you just want a shout out on the pod, send an email to enzonepod@gmail.com. Thanks for listening. See you next time.